You're tuned to Sounds of Dissent on WZBC in Newton, 90.3 FM. We're very glad to be joined right now on the line by Andy Stevenson, the Associate Director of Black Box Voting. Welcome to the program, Andy Stevenson.
Good morning. Thank you.
I wonder if you could tell us a bit about the series of public records records requests that your organization, Black Box Voting, is submitting. You want to obtain internal computer logs and some other documents. You've been very, very busy in the last few days since the election. I wonder if you could tell us a bit about what's been going on.
Well, election night at 8:30 p.m. Pacific, we hit the send button on 3,467 public records requests. It's the largest single public records request ever in the history of the United States. And we are indeed requesting audit logs, trouble tickets, among a few things, modem logs from every single county in the country that's using electronic voting machines to kind of gauge what kind of, and we're using the F word, fraud was going on in the election. Just yesterday, however, we did have a bit of good news. Ralph Nader has asked for a recount in the state of New Hampshire. And this is important because New Hampshire is a good test case. It has hand-counted ballots as well as optically scanned ballots. And the results there were disturbing. Even though the Kerry won the state, there was some indications of manipulation going on there. So a recount there would open the door to recounts in many other states.
How did Ralph Nader's request go through? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, yesterday afternoon at about 1:30 here in Seattle, I received a call from a woman in New Hampshire who had been, or she's actually in, I believe, Indiana, but she's from New Hampshire, had been running the numbers. She was a statistician, and she said, there's serious problems here. Perhaps we could get Ralph Nader or John Kerry to request the recount. Obviously, Mr. Bush was not going to do it, so I started putting the call out to activists to fax Mr. Nader a plea to please ask for a recount, and then actually called the Randy Rhodes Show, who's on Air America, and put out the call for activists to fax Mr. Nader, and he agreed to the recount, so he sent in the paperwork, and I believe Monday they'll start the recount.
Your organization is called Help America Audit, and Black Box Voting has taken the position that fraud did take place in the election on Tuesday.
Yes.
Through
we do. Go ahead.
You say you base this on hard evidence. What is that?
Well, Bev and I observed here in Seattle, Washington, on September 14th in our primary that we had here in the state of Washington. In King County, we watched the election that night, and there were several problems, significant problems, with the GEMS tabulator that night. The modems, which our county executive has assured us they don't use, were crashing. There were at least 24 that were connected to the machine. Right after that election, we did a public records request and found a 3.5-hour gap on the audit log. Now, the significance of that gap in the audit log is the equivalent of the 18-minute gap on the Watergate tapes. So we decided that the best way to find the fraud that was going on is to request the exact same records that we requested from King County. And indeed, it will more than likely show the fraud. There's going to be some significant problems that we discover. So it is going to throw some doubt onto the entire election.
You've also indicated that new information indicated hackers may have targeted central computers that are counting votes. What computers are you talking about? What evidence exists for that?
Well, the optical scans, whether it's touch screens or the optical scan machines, all the votes are tabulated in a central tabulator. And the central tabulator is basically, and in the case of Diebold, is simply a Dell desktop computer running either Windows XP or Windows 2000. It's unpatched.
You're kidding me.
No. With modems attached. Now, if you know anything about programming, the way you dial into the computer is using RAS, which is called Remote Access Server. It's a component of the Windows operating system, and it's quite easy to dial in, and as long as you have the proper settings, you can dial in and access the desktop.
Have you obtained records about the security settings on that remote access service?
Yes. Well, Beth Harris had found a cache of 40,000 files that were stored on a Diebold FTP site. They have not changed the settings, and in fact, those instructions, step-by-step instructions on how to set up your machine, were left on the internet for 6.5 years with passwords and everything. The passwords are hard-coded into the optical scan machine, so it's still there. You know, the same passwords that sat out on the internet for 6.5 years are still in place. So anybody with a laptop who had chance to maybe have found that software prior to Bev finding it could literally dial into the system and do anything they want. They would literally own the machine.
You've
done silence there, buddy.
It is stunning. You're filing Freedom of Information Act requests to get these 3,467 public records. Is that correct for all these over 3,000? Is this? Do you just have a template that you hammer out all 3,000, or does this take a lot of time? How much does it cost to do this sort of work?
Well, the sending of the request is relatively easy. We did a fax blast and emails. In some cases, we didn't have email addresses for the county, so we faxed directly to them. So we use, you know, a fax email program. And literally, we hit the send button, and it was, probably 20 minutes later that everything was sent out.
You compare counting votes to basic bookkeeping and accounting.
Right.
And Bev Harris, who we spoke to a couple of months ago on this program, from Black Box Voting, your organization, said that any election should at a minimum require 4 audits.
Correct.
Do you propose a way to do that?
Well, you know, after the fact, at this point, we're basically going to be doing forensic auditing. I mean, you know, there's no way now to, especially in the case of the touchscreen machines in Georgia, and I'll give you a real good example of a couple of things that have happened. In the case of Georgia, we have a candidate who called and said, well, I was running 50-50. The Republican and I were running 50-50, neck and neck. Election night, it was completely lopsided. It was 91% of the vote for the Republican and 9% for the Democrat. One of the Democrats' election workers who was observing in the central count computer, in the central count location that night, observed the Republican candidate talking with one of his supporters, who patted him on the back and said, see, I told you this would put you into office. He grabbed up the interim reports that were coming out of the GEM server and left the building with them. So nobody knows what the interim results were. In the case of that, in that particular case, we know we're going to be doing specific records requests that are going to shed some light on what happened there.
Tell us a little bit more about the GEMS server or GEMS tabulator. Is that an acronym?
The acronym for that, it stands for Global Elections Management System. Prior to the purchase of the company by Diebold, it was called Global Election Systems. It's based in McKinney, Texas, with offices in Vancouver, British Columbia, where all the programming work is done. So that's what GEMS is standing for. And it's based on Access Database, and all the computer professionals that I've spoken with, when I tell them that it's based on Access, laugh, shake their heads, and put their head down in their hands going, oh, my God, because it's so insecure. It's great for small to medium-sized businesses, but the amount of data that's you know, being input into this system, it's not stable for it at all. And plus, it does have, you know, gaping security holes in it.
I'm just curious if you can tell, and if you're just joining us, by the way, my guest is Andy Stevenson, Associate Director of Black Box Voting. What sort of attention have you received since Tuesday, Andy Stevenson, from the press worldwide, and specifically here in the United States?
Well, surprisingly, the press is, you know, for the 2 years prior to the election, we worked hard to make people aware of this issue. And we did a pretty good job. I mean, you know, people were expecting that there would be problems. I don't think they quite expected that the problems would be on the scale that they were. now it's I see this concerted effort by the mainstream press to say, well, you know, we were wrong. The exit polls were actually, you know, it was just a fluke, and they're trying to brush it over. But I can tell you from my own experience, the number of phone calls and emails that I have received from around the country are the people are overwhelmingly saying, we don't believe this for a second. Help us. And that's what we're trying to do.
What is the way that you're encouraging people to get involved?
Well, we're looking for lawyers, for one. We need lawyers in every single state to file cases that we're coming up with. For example, we'd love to have one in Nevada. We'd love to have one down in Georgia. We need one in Minnesota, because Minnesota basically told us, we're not going to help you with any of your records requests. Now, even though Minnesota, again, it went for Kerry, but there are some strange anomalies in that state that need to be looked at to discover if there was actually some vote tampering or vote manipulation going on in that state.
You're tuned to WZBC in Newton, 90.3 FM. My guest is Andy Stevenson, Associate Director of Black Box Voting. Andy Stevenson, what are your plans for the next couple of months, and when do you expect to receive the public records that you've requested through the Freedom of Information Act? Are you allied at all with other lawyers' organizations or the Lawyers Guild?
No, we've had some preliminary contacts with the Lawyers Guild. We have a few hard deadlines. In the case of Ohio, if we're going to do any recounts in the state of Ohio, we have until the 13th to do that. And we're looking at and working with a couple of candidates that are in Ohio to ask for recounts. So that'll be probably our next step. But the first step that we need to do is to get the public records in. And, in fact, again, in Ohio, we need a lawyer, because it looks like the state of Ohio is going to drag their feet. And in this instance, we need the hard data now, not a month or 2 months down the road. We need it now.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Andy Stevenson of Black Box Voting. People can find out more information at blackboxvoting.org. It's not the different.com site, but .org.
.org. And if anybody would like to contact me directly with contact information, you know, lawyers or whatever, my email address is andy@blackboxvoting.org.
Andy Stevenson, thank you so much for joining us today on Sounds of Dissent.
Thank you so much.
Again, you can find blackboxvoting.org on the World Wide Web. In just a moment, we'll speak with a co-founder of the Citizens Alliance for Secure Elections. She's an attorney herself and an editor for a legal publisher. She said that 7 counties in Ohio have electronic voting machines, and none of them have paper trails, which raises issues of accuracy and integrity as to how we could possibly verify a vote count. A recount with a paper trail without a paper trail is meaningless. It's just a duplication of data, just like you might find on a computer disk. You're tuned to WZBC 90.3 FM. You can find WZBC News daily here on 90.3. Every Saturday, this program, Sounds of Dissent, coming at you from 11 a.m. until 1 p.m. Sundays. From 6 to 10 a.m., it's No U-Turn Radio, Political and News Review. And Monday through Friday at noontime, Democracy Now! Brings you an hour of news from noon to 1 p.m. Stay tuned to 90.3 FM. We'll be joined by Susan Truitt and then Tom Hartman before we conclude for the news program today. I'm John Grebe. Hope you'll call after the program with questions or comments at 617-552-3511. That's after 1 p.m. Stay tuned to WZBC 90.3.
They sang at the break of day. Start again, I heard them say. Don't dwell on what has passed away or what is yet to be. War, they will be fought again. holy dove, she will be cut again. Heart and soul and body again. The dove is never free. Ring the bells that still to ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. Were signs, the signs were sent, the birth betrayed, the marriage spent, yeah, the widowhood of every government, signs were all to see. Say their prayers out loud, but they've summoned up a thundercloud. They're gonna hear from me.
WZBC in Newton, a little bit of Leonard Cohen. You're tuned to Sounds of Dissent on 90.3 FM. The co-founder of the Citizens Alliance for Secure Elections, Susan Truitt, is an attorney and an editor for a legal publisher. Welcome to Sounds of Dissent, Susan Truitt.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Susan Truitt, tell us about what you saw in Ohio on Tuesday.
What we saw in Ohio was unprecedented voter turnout, which was good. We also saw unprecedented delays in waiting to vote, which was horrible. We had reports of people waiting anywhere from 3 to 10 hours to vote. Many of the delays were in lower-income minority districts. There were reports that there were many, many more machines being held in the warehouse in Franklin County, Ohio, for instance, than probably needed to be held. And we're investigating those reports right now. But we have heard a figure of 2,000 machines being held in the warehouse while we had 5 to 10 hour waits in line.
I've heard that those 2,000 machines were held. I've also heard that Secretary of State Blackwell in Ohio, a Republican himself, had an excess of voting machines delivered to the white affluent polling places in Ohio.
We've heard reports of that as well, and we're investigating those charges. We did have people out on the ground visiting precincts, and in the more affluent white communities, there was perhaps a 20-minute wait to vote. The difference is astounding and stark, and not only do we have concerns about the time it took for people to vote, but Secretary of State Blackwell, who is also the co-chair of the Bush-Cheney campaign in Ohio, took steps from the very beginning of this election process to thwart turnout, to thwart registration. He was the one who was trying to basically force counties in the state to purchase Diebold paperless electronic voting machines. Our group was instrumental in stopping that, and Ohio had no new paperless electronic voting machines for the 2004 election. But then Secretary of State Blackwell was requiring 80-weight paper for voter registration and was throwing out any registration application that did not meet that requirement. And after a couple of days of public outcry, he reversed that decision. But it caused a lot of confusion. And then his issue, his stance on provisional balloting issues was confusing and restrictive, and a district federal court in Ohio turned down his restrictive interpretation of a provisional balloting Unfortunately, that district court decision was reversed in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. So in the end, there was very restrictive interpretation of who was permitted to vote provisionally.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Susan Truitt, attorney and co-founder of the Citizens Alliance for Secure Elections. Susan Truitt, you've observed that the seven counties in Ohio that have electronic voting machines, none of them have paper trails. Are there any other electronic voting machines in Ohio that do have paper trails?
No, we have no electronic voting machines in Ohio that have electronic or that have the paper trails. Another concern of ours is that some of the central tabulators of even the optical scan and possibly the punch cards are ES&S, and we are not sure if some of them have the GEMS software in it that Bev Harris of Black Box Voting has been warning against for months.
We just actually were on the line with Black Box Voting with Andy Stevenson, and he mentioned the Global Elections Management System, the GEMS system. What was the other EM&S acronym you just mentioned?
Oh, it was ES&S, and ES&S is a voting vendor, a private company that sells the GEMS software with their tabulation systems. And I know that there were counties in Ohio that were using the ES&S tabulation systems. And ES&S and Diebold are companies that are owned by brothers, the Ercevic brothers. And in the minds of many, including me, they're cut from the same fabric.
I was curious to, excuse me for the echo on the line, ask you about any efforts to have a recount that the Citizens Alliance for Secure Elections has initiated or is supporting in Ohio.
Our organization is definitely examining the possibility of contesting the election based on the suppression of the vote, all the things that happened even before the election, as well as evidence of anomalies in the count in Ohio that at least raise issues of voter fraud. For instance, the Gahanna incident that is receiving widespread press at this moment. Gahanna is a precinct that's in Franklin County, Ohio, central Ohio, and it registered 4,000 votes for George Bush, but only a little over 600 voters voted at the precinct.
600 voters voted over 3,000 votes for George Bush.
Over 4,000 votes for George Bush, right. And we have a great deal of concern with the provisional ballots, which initially there were reports from Secretary of State Ken Blackwell's office that there were approximately 400,000 provisional ballots. Then the number was pared down almost immediately to 250,000. But then he came out within a day or so claiming that there were only about 175,000 provisional ballots. In the last presidential election in Ohio, there were approximately 100,000 provisional ballots cast, and the turnout in this election was vastly increased over the prior election in 2000, and it's difficult to believe that the provisional ballots did not more than double. The last presidential election in 2000, over 90% of those provisional ballots ended up being declared valid and being counted. There is a vote difference in Ohio between Bush and Kerry of 136,221 votes. So obviously, if we have a number of 250,000 provisional ballots, and 90% of those are going to be accurate, and the assumption is that at least, at least half or more are going to be for John Kerry, we have a major issue here as to who won Ohio.
So how clear are you that there's the possibility that the number of votes, when all of the spoiled ballots and all of the misvoting are taken into account, and any incorrectly counted ballots are counted correctly, how sure are you that the vote for John Kerry might exceed the number of votes for George Bush?
I am fairly certain that if we look at the provisional ballots, if we look at the glitches, as they're characterizing them, or the anomalies in the vote count in Ohio that we have turned up thus far, I think that it's pretty clear to me that John Kerry carried Ohio.
You say that Secretary of State of Ohio Blackwell tried to get the entire state to buy new voting machines without a paper trail last year. Can you tell us more about that?
Absolutely. He was trying to get all 88 counties to purchase paperless voting machines for the 2004 election. And he approved only three vendors from whom the boards of election in Ohio could purchase those machines. And those three vendors were Diebold, Ohio-based, of infamous, reputation, having been decertified in California by California Secretary of State Kevin Shelley. The other vendor was ES&S, whom I said earlier is owned by the brother who owns Diebold, and Hart InterCivic. All three of those vendors have extremely right-wing origins, and they've all publicly supported and donated money to right-wing candidates. Wally O'Dell, the CEO of Diebold, of course, had the infamous quote that was written down in a letter, wasn't just an off-the-cuff comment. He wrote in a letter, quote, "I am committed to delivering the electoral votes of Ohio to the president in 2004, end of quote. Wally O'Dell was also a patriot, which means he raised over $300,000 for the Bush campaign. It obviously raises great arguments of conflict of interest when the public votes in a presidential election are being counted and tabulated by private companies who use software that they claim is trade secret and proprietary, and they're doing this all behind closed doors. So basically what has happened in this country is that we have privatized our election. What we need to do is to have a movement among American voters, and it has to be coming from the people, because obviously the Democratic Party has given up on this, and obviously we can't count on the Republicans. But we need to have a movement in this country to demand transparency in our electoral system.
Susan Truitt is my guest from Ohio right now. Susan Truitt, how many elections have you participated in the state of Ohio?
As far as a voter, I have been voting since 1976, and I have always voted in all elections. As far as being an activist in the electoral process, I have to tell you, I was one of the Americans asleep behind the wheel, as many of us were, and I did not become educated on this issue until February of this year. State Senator Teresa Fetter, who's a Democrat from Toledo, convened the Joint Committee on Ballot Security in Ohio in February and held public hearings on Blackwell's decision to try to purchase these paperless electronic voting machines. And U.S. Representative Marcy Kaptur from Cleveland, Ohio, was also instrumental in getting these hearings convened. And I applaud both of them for their efforts on this, because there were those of us in the public who weren't paying any attention, and we were sleeping. These public hearings woke us all up, and we had wonderful testimony from Dan Wallach and other computer science experts. And we heard how dangerous these paperless machines are. Blackwell was hoping that the Ohio voters would stay asleep and that he could shuffle these things in through the back door. He backed down from trying to get 88 counties to purchase them to then 31 counties. And our organization, Case Ohio, it's www.caseohio.org, organized extensive lobbying efforts with the Joint Committee on Ballot Security, and then with the Ohio House, and then with the Ohio Senate. And then the law was passed that Senator Teresa Fetter had introduced requiring a paper trail. The only glitch was the paper trail was not required until 2006. So So that left the 2004 elections. And the law permitted the county boards of elections then to revisit their contracts that Blackwell had basically forced them to enter into with Diebold, ES&S, and Hartinder Civic to determine whether they would affirm or disaffirm their contracts. So our organization then lobbied the boards of elections in all 88 counties in the state, and we presented testimony at their hearings and meetings and sent them faxes and emails and phone calls. True Majority was a wonderful organization in helping mobilize voters to send information. MoveOn.org was very helpful. We've had some help from national organizations like that. Electronic Frontier Foundation collected funds for litigation in Ohio to stop the purchase of these machines. So we did have a great deal of help, and in the end, all but three of the counties in Ohio disaffirmed contracts to purchase paperless voting machines this year. And then when Blackwell saw the writing on the wall, he issued a statement saying he was stopping deployment of any of these machines. So it was a victory as far as not having the whole state in paperless voting machines. But he continued his thwarting of the turnout, of registrations, of the provisional ballot. So he's been attacking the whole electoral process piecemeal, step by step. It's been a real battle here in Ohio.
Susan Truitt, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. You mentioned your website, Case Ohio, CASEOhio.org.
Yes.
How can people interested in following this case and in getting involved with the Citizens Alliance for Secure Elections case contact you, and what are the actions you're encouraging people to take right now to influence the vote count?
Excellent questions. I would welcome anyone to visit our website and to contact us through that. And I have been sending out mass emails basically giving steps to take. We don't collect money as an organization, so we can't really accept donations. We're not set up for that. But I'm suggesting that people send money to www.blackboxvoting.org. That is Bev Harris's site. And she is doing a world of good with her tenacious and brave work on election issues. And she sent out Freedom of Information Act requests to every county in the country. So she obviously needs some funds to help that process up. The Electronic Frontier Foundation, www.eff.org, could also use donations, as they oversee almost all of the e-voting litigation in the country.
Susan Truitt, thank you so much for your time and your work today. Thanks for joining us on Sounds of Dissent.
Thank you very much for having me.
Susan Truitt is an attorney. She's also an editor for Legal Publisher, and she co-founded the Citizens Alliance for Secure Elections. You can find out more about that organization at CASE, CaseOhio.org. You're tuned to 90.3 FM WZBC in Newton. We should take a look at one of the most recently written articles from journalist Greg Palast, who you heard from here on WZBC on our special election night coverage this past Tuesday. He writes a couple of days ago that CNN's exit poll showed John Kerry beating George Bush among Ohio women by 53% to 47%. John Kerry also defeated Bush among Ohio's male voters, 51% to 49%. Unless a third gender voted in Ohio, Kerry took the state. This, again, according to CNN's exit poll. Not all votes spoil equally. Most of the votes, according to every official report, come from African American and minority precincts. That is, most of the votes spoiled. We saw this in Florida in 2000. Exit polls showed Al Gore with a plurality of at least 50,000, but it did not match the official count. That's because the official, Secretary of State Katherine Harris, excluded 179,855 spoiled votes. In Florida, as in Ohio, most of these votes lost were cast on punch cards, where the hole was not punched through completely, leaving a hanging chad. Whose cards were discarded? Expert statisticians investigating spoilage for the government calculated that 54% of the ballots thrown in the dumpster were cast by African Americans. You can read this report from the U.S. Civil Rights Commission yourself. There were also the challenges against voters. That's a polite word for the Republican Party of Ohio's use of, as Greg Palast writes, an old Ku Klux Klan technique, the attempt to block thousands of voters of color at the polls in Ohio, Wisconsin, and Florida. The Republicans laid plans for poll workers to ambush citizens under arcane laws, almost never used, allowing party-designated poll watchers to finger individual voters and demand they be denied a ballot. The Ohio courts were horrified, and federal law prohibits such things. Federal law prohibits the targeting of voters where a race is a factor in the challenge, but our Supreme Court was prepared to let Republicans stand in the voting booth door. In New Mexico, where a Kerry plurality, if all votes are counted, is more obvious still, before the election, John Kerry is down by several thousand votes in New Mexico, though not one ballot has yet been counted. How did that happen? The spoilage. CNN said George Bush took New Mexico by 11,620 votes. Again, the network total added up to that miraculous and non-existent 100% of ballots cast. New Mexico reported in the last race a spoilage rate of 2.68%, votes lost almost entirely in Hispanic, Native American, and poor precincts, Democratic turf. From Tuesday's vote, assuming the ballot loss rate is the same, we can expect to see 18,000 ballots in the spoilage bin. Spoilage has a very Democratic look in New Mexico. Hispanic voters in the Enchanted State, who voted more than 2-1 for Kerry, are five times as likely to have their vote spoil as a white voter. Counting these uncounted votes would easily overtake the Bush plurality. You can find this article yourself, Greg Palast's article, Kerry Won, excerpted in pieces on the website TomPaine.com. You can also find GregPalast.com. Very glad to be able to bring to us a fellow radio commentator, the author of the book Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights, and the recent article, The Ultimate Felony Against Democracy, Privatizing the Vote. I'm very glad. Welcome to the program, Tom Hartman.
Hey, John. Thank you.
Tom, thanks for coming on Sounds of Dissent today. You've said and you've asked, why are we allowing corporations to exclusively handle our vote in an invisible and unaccountable way? How did this come to happen in the United States?
Well, it's been sort of a creeping process, but in large part, the explosion of it in the last 2 years was the result of the Help America Vote Act, which was this piece of legislation that the Republicans rushed through Congress in 2002 to, quote, solve the problem of Florida, end quote, which took $3 or $4 billion of our taxpayer money and via the states handed it over to a small number of very large privately held corporations. One of them, Diebold, whose president is Wally O'Dell, the guy who said, who headed up the George Bush campaign was one of the leaders of the George Bush campaign in the state of Ohio and wrote the infamous memo to Ohio Republicans where he said that he was committed to delivering the vote for George W. in Ohio. And ES&S, the company that Chuck Hagel used to be the head of, or at least the precursor company to it, which evolved out of a company that was started by a family that believes that the Bible should replace the Constitution in the United States. And these corporations, are handling our vote. And this, I think, the privatizing the vote is the ultimate crime against democracy.
You call it the ultimate crime, the ultimate felony against democracy. What other crimes against democracy do you believe are going on in the elections and the campaign system?
Well, as a consequence of the vote being handed over to these private corporations who then have installed vote counting machines that are basically just Windows PCs and that can be hacked into, there's increasing evidence now that in many of the swing states, It may well be that John Kerry actually won. He actually may have won in a landslide, both in the popular vote and the electoral vote. I know that that's, you know, up until today, a lot of people saying that were in the kind of tinfoil hat crowd, you know, the UFOs or people in denial. But very interesting. If you go through the state of Florida has now published on their website the county by county listing of who voted, of how many registered Democrats and Republicans are in each county, and of what the vote was for Kerry and Bush and other candidates in each county. And it's really strange. If you look at the larger counties that would, of course, be expected to get more media scrutiny, if 70% of the registered voters were Democrats, then roughly 70% of the vote came in for Kerry. On the other hand, if you look at the counties with fewer than 50,000 people in them, and these were done on optical scan machines. Many of these were actually paper ballots, but they were scanned by computers and tabulated on PCs. In some of these counties, you have situations where if 70% of the registered voters were Democrats, 70% of the vote went to George Bush. And this is really raising some eyebrows right now. I just wrote a piece for this that about an hour ago I submitted to commondreams.org, and you know, we'll see you know, if it gets up or not. But this is the big area of inquiry now, and you've got the fellow who was running for Congress in Florida in the 16th district, the United States Congress, Jeff Fisher, suggesting that not only does he know that the vote was hacked, but he knows who did it, and he's waiting for the FBI to show up. And when I interviewed him about 3 hours ago, and this is a developing story, but it may be that we're looking at the crime of the century here, not just the perhaps the largest crime in the history of the United States. On the other hand, it may not be. Whether it is or it isn't, frankly, I think it's simply wrong that we take the commons of our vote and give it to a private corporation. There are, you know, the whole point of government, of having a government that is responsive to the people, to we the people, is that there are some things that we consider the commons, that we decide that we all want to do together and we're all going to pay for together, and that we're going to not outsource our police departments, our fire departments, our air traffic control system, you know, our roads and highways, the safety of our water supply and our food supply. We're going to make sure that these are done, and we're going to do it. We're not going to hand it over to a corporation whose first loyalty is profit. You know, instead, we're going to make sure that it gets done by us and accountable to us. And our vote, which is the means by which we assert our opinion and control this government of, by, and for we the people, is the most important of all of these commons. And yet, weirdly, strangely, inexplicably, by and large, Republicans have decided to give our vote to these private corporations.
Tom Hartman, we've been reporting on some of the irregularities, especially in Ohio and just mentioned New Mexico. In the Associated Press article by Doug Gross yesterday, the group Count Every Vote 2004 had reported, and it was reported by the Associated Press, they documented hundreds of voting irregularities affecting poor and minority voters in seven southern states. Long lines, faulty equipment, deliberate voter intimidation. Keith Jennings, their director, said while the United States is a strong democracy, it's also a flawed democracy. Their group was founded after the 2000 election to try to assure voting rights for underrepresented and marginalized sectors of the population. There were 700 monitors this past Tuesday in Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, North, and South Carolina. They were trying to observe the timely opening of the polls, correct ballots being present, functioning machines, and impartial elections officials. In their preliminary findings, they list a shortage of early voting locations in Duval County, Florida, the largest county in the area and of the voting age population, the failure of electronic voting machines in three South Carolina counties, and the loss of votes at a North Carolina precinct when too much information was stored on a computer unit. In one case, in St. Petersburg, Florida, sprinklers came on while people were waiting to vote, and the poll workers did not know how to turn them off. this report goes on and on. We're seeing some skepticism emerging gradually among the American people and even maybe more slowly among the major press and television news about the full integrity of elections in the United States. International election observers that came through the OSCE, the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, came to the United States through a kind of a fluke in an old treaty, agreeing with some European countries to exchange election observers. There were other international election observers who the United States refused to did not recognize, brought in by the group Global Exchange. From other countries, it's just beginning to dawn on a lot of us in the United States that the electoral democracy that has held itself up to the rest of the world as the premier, perhaps the only shining example and beacon of hope for a freedom of choice, for liberty and democracy and the equal participation among all citizens, perhaps that the United States might not be able to claim that position of first place among democracies in the world. What's been your sense as a radio commentator yourself and a longtime student of politics in the United States about how the perception of the United States democracy is changing, just among the citizens ourselves?
We have a long history in the United States of voter fraud and intimidation. I mean, it's the Jim Crow laws, the literacy tests in the South to suppress the black vote. From Reconstruction up through the 1950s, early 1960s, we have a long history of this sort of thing going on. This is nothing new. What I think is surprising to so many people in 2004. Is that we thought that we had cleaned it up in the 60s. The last time that there was any intimation of problems, you know, on a large scale was the 1960 election, in which, to this day, many nonpartisan election scholars think that Nixon actually won the election. Nixon certainly thought he won the election, but he graciously conceded to Kennedy simply because he didn't want to put the country through the trauma of a trial. Unlike George Bush suing Al Gore in 2000 in Florida. But it's on the one hand, it's nothing new. On the other hand, it's not necessary. This is a train wreck that a lot of people saw coming a long time ago. And you have to ask the question, for example, Rush Holt, Congressman Rush Holt of New Jersey, who has a PhD in physics. I mean, the guy's no dummy, and he understands how computers work. Proposed almost 2 years ago a piece of legislation, and there's a similar one in the Senate that was co-sponsored by Hillary Clinton, that would require voting machines to be randomly audited to produce a voter-verified ballot, paper trail. They would basically make them more transparent. Now, it doesn't go as far as I think it should go. I don't think that corporations should be in the ballot box at all. I think that that's just, you know, a crime against democracy. But he was trying to actually just, you know, say, okay, if we're going to have corporations doing this, at least let's do it in a way that's accountable. And Tom DeLay and Denny Hastert fought that thing, and they have refused to allow it to even come out of committee, much less come up for a vote, even though he's got, you know, the majority of the Democrats and even quite a few Republicans in the House of Representatives signed on as co-sponsors. And so one has to wonder what's going on when the Republicans don't want transparency in voting and the Democrats are working so hard to get transparency in voting. Could it be that something really horrible is going on in our democracy? This goes beyond, I think, Democrats in denial.
Tom Hartman, an interesting case you have pointed out. The Washington Post in January 97 wrote that Senator Chuck Hagel's victory against the incumbent Democratic governor of Nebraska was the major Republican upset in that November election.
Right.
Senator Chuck Hagel was the first Republican in 24 years to win a Senate seat in Nebraska, nearly all on unauditable machines. He had just sold the state. That's quoting the Washington Post. You noted that Senator Chuck Hagel had, before stepping down and running for the United States Senate in Nebraska, he had been the head of the voting machine company, now known as ES&S, that had just computerized Nebraska's vote.
Right.
So without making any special claims about his potential undue influence, which I'm not sure has been proven,
It's definitely not been proven, although Charlie Matulka, the Democrat who ran against him in the last election, is running around saying as loudly as he can to anybody who will listen that Chuck Hagel stole the election.
But we're seeing an appearance of impropriety in a system which should have nothing but the ultimate appearance of pristine democracy, unfettered, untainted.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, transparency is absolutely necessary. You know, Thomas Paine talked about this, that the vote is the franchise by which all of the franchises are achieved. It is the piece of democracy that makes everything else in democracy possible. And to hand this over to a small number of private corporations that claim trade secrets and Fourth Amendment privacy rights to keep us from knowing how their machines work, how they're programmed, who does what, you know, what happened where, and just say, okay, we're going to trust them to tell us what our vote was, is insane. It's insane. It's not only a violation of the principles that this country was founded on, it doesn't make sense. So that's my rant on that.
Tom Hartman, we've just about run out of time, but where can people hear your radio program around the country?
Well, we're on the Sirius satellite system. Noon to three is my show. Sirius carries the first hour live, and then the second 2 hours they tape delay. I'm also on radio stations from California to North Carolina. You can find the information at tomhartman.com.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Tom Hartman.
John, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me on your program.
Thanks for joining us on Sounds of Dissent. Tom Hartman is the author of the book Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. He also wrote the recent article, The Ultimate Felony Against Democracy, Privatizing the Vote. You're tuned to Sounds of Dissent here on 90.3 FM, WZBC in Newton, coming at you every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. We also offer daily news and political review here on WZBC from Sundays at 6 to 10 a.m. in the morning. It's No U-Turn Radio. And you can catch Monday through Friday, noontime, every weekday, Democracy Now! For a full hour of uncensored news and reports here on 90.3 FM, serving the entire Greater Boston Metro region. My name's John Grebe. Thanks for tuning in today on Sounds of Dissent. We've been standing up for the American attention span these last 2 hours since 11, and it's perhaps time to take a stretch. We've been live, local, and listening to the world, independent and not a commercial in sight on 90.3 ZBC. Tomorrow and every Sunday morning, 6 to 10 a.m., No U-Turn Radio. Monday to Friday, Democracy Now! At noontime here on 90.3 FM. You can email us at news@wzbc.org. Our research librarian is Deborah Levine. Special thanks today to Petrina, to Tracy Brown, Colin Rinesmith, Richard Krasner, and Lee Burek for help producing today's program. I'm John Grebe. I hope you'll call with any questions, comments, or news of your own at 617-552-3511. That's 617-552-3511.
May God help America. God help America. Call Rose. May God help America. Pray for the Constitution. Pray for the United States of America. May God help America. And my family comes first.
Ich liebe unsere Wählung. Ich liebe unser deutsches Volk.
And my family. And my family comes first. Pray for the Constitution. New powers and a new justice. New powers. And a new justice.
For the Deutschen Reichstag. For the Deutschen Reichstag. Mit dem heißen Wunsch, in ihm eine Stütze zu finden für die Durchführung ihrer Mission.
We have done the hard work. We are entering a season of power. Earlier today, Senator Kerry called with his congratulations. We had a really good phone call. He was very gracious. Has spoken. Senator Kerry waged a spirited campaign. And he and his supporters can be proud of their efforts. Laura and I wish Senator Kerry and the race and the whole family all our best wishes. America has spoken. And I'm humbled by the trust and the confidence. With that trust comes a duty to serve all Americans. And I will do my best to fulfill that duty. Every day is your president. Every day is your every day is your president. I have spoken.